and welcome to the Heat Check Podcast, Miami Herald, Miami Heat Podcast. I'm David Wilson, and I'm joined, as always, on the other line by Anthony Chang, our Heat writer here at the Herald. Anthony, what's going on?
Busy times, David. This offseason, it feels like it's been kind of long since the Heat were eliminated in the first round, but things are really starting to pick up now with the draft in a few days, and free agency starting later this week, or later, early next week, actually.
Yeah, I will say the draft and free agency definitely snuck up on me this year. And part of it, I think, is the Olympics also, which we will get to in the second half of the episode. You like that transition? We have Tim Reynolds coming on from the Associated Press. He is in Tokyo. We're just trying to make our schedules work. So we'll have him come on in the second half of the episode to talk about what the heck happened against France and just this the team's outlook for a medal and all that kind of stuff. Obviously some BAM talk, maybe some Nigeria basketball talk. So a lot of Olympic stuff to get to. And like I said, it's kind of, in a lot of ways, I think it has kind of overshadowed the draft / free agency, period that we are now, coming into. You know, to me, and again, also how long the season went, I think obviously crowded on that too. Where, to me, the draft usually kind of feels like its own whole season, right? You get like a month of basically, like, everyone's putting out their updated lists every week. And this week, I guess, like, guys like Sam Vecenie at the Athletic and, you know, The Ringer does their draft guide. I guess those have been updating for the last month or two, probably, but I haven't been really paying attention to it. Now, all of a sudden, we are here at the draft. Obviously, a weird one for the Heat. They do not have any picks going into the draft on Thursday. But Anthony, I'll start you with this question then. Do you think the Heat will make a pick on Thursday?
In my humble opinion, I do not think that he will enter Thursday's draft planning to get into the draft. Like, okay. I don't think they're planning to, I don't think they have the intention of doing it. That's my like read on the situation. But I think if someone on their board drops to where they feel like they can take advantage of the situation and get in and get that guy, then I think they will. So I don't rule it out, but that's kind of like a...
Right, if they have a guy who's like in their top 20 or something and he falls into the middle of the second round,
and
you can just buy that pick instead of having to trade something for it, then it becomes...
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the Heat have $5 million to spend on a pick, so they have the resources to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, paying, it's money, so you're paying a couple million dollars to buy a pick, so you have to really like that player. So I think it's possible, and they have the means to get it done. But I think if you know, the draft, there's nobody on the board that kind of falls or they feel like would be a steal at a certain spot, I think they're fine just kind of going the undrafted route. They've had a lot of success there. I could see both sides, but if I had to predict, I would say they don't make a pick and they just sign a bunch of undrafted players in the hours after the draft.
Yeah, I think that makes most sense. You know, once you get once you get out of the top 45, basically, like, there's really no difference in a lot of ways between drafting and just waiting it out. As long as obviously the guy you want is going to fall out of the draft. You know, a lot of times guys will like kind of get promises even before the draft ends that they're kind of signed with the team. It's how you kind of see that rush of you know, that night right after the draft is a rush of undrafted free agents signing. And the Heat, we were talking about this. I don't think we talked about this on the mic last week. We were talking about this off the air. The Heat, they like need a lot of undrafted free agents this year.
Yeah.
Especially with, we don't know how far Nigeria is going to go in the Olympics, but you know, two of the, best, you know, two of the centerpiece guys for this for the Heat Summer League team theoretically are going to be KZ and Precious, probably, right? And those guys are obviously playing with Nigeria right now, and we don't know when they're going to get there. Other than that, you know, the Heat, you know, like Omer Yurtseven, I guess, will be in Summer League, but you know, Tyler Hero's not going to Summer League. Yeah, Max Strus will be in Summer League, but yeah, Tyler Hero's not going to Summer League. You know, obviously, like, Duncan Robinson, oh, he's a free agent, I guess, so who knows where he's even going to be. But, you know, like, guys like that are not going to Summer League at this point, even though they're young and you know, typically, like, a third-year undrafted guy would be going to Summer League. Those guys are established enough that this team's going to basically have to build a team around Strus, over Yurtseven and maybe the two Nigerians of undrafted guys, because again, they don't have any first round picks, they don't have any second round picks, and does, like you said, doesn't seem necessarily likely that they're going to get in there.
Yeah, and it'll be undrafted guys, and it'll be also a few kind of guys that have been overseas or maybe that played for Sioux Falls in the past few years. There'll be a few veterans. I was talking to Adam Simon for a draft story, and I asked him about that, and he's like, yeah, it's just like you have to kind of find the right combination. It's not going to be all undrafted guys, but you find the right combination of kind of guys you want to take a look at maybe that are veterans that, you know, you don't just have undrafted rookies on there. So there'll definitely be a lot of undrafted rookies. They'll have to really prioritize that, especially if they don't have a pick. But there'll also be probably some guys that have played for the Sky Force in recent seasons, and other guys that maybe have been playing overseas that he maybe want to take a look at.
Yeah, and we talked about it. There will be guys from the Olympics who maybe pop up on the radar for some teams, right? Like we've seen, I think it's Caleb Agata from Nigeria that's played well. And there'll just, you know, there'll be a couple other guys who just kind of come out of, you know, who pop on the radar that obviously NBA teams have been following, but maybe elevate their stock a little bit and get that summer league invitation.
Yeah, I still wonder, like, you know, even if Nigeria gets bounced in group play and they're done August 1st, like, does the Heat push Precious and KZ and Gabe to play in summer league? I mean, they might, but I mean, those guys have been in camp with Nigeria since like the middle of June, you know. They really haven't had much of an offseason. I know they're young, but part of me is like, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just have them around the team, maybe practicing with the team in Vegas and not playing games, but just kind of being practices and like kind of just learning from the coaches. But it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that, just because it is kind of such a unique situation with the Olympics and Summer League kind of overlapping here.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, you know, those European guys that they find, you know, and the Heat have done pretty well, I think, with, obviously we talked about it with the undrafted, but also with some like the G League kind of guy. You know, even like Kendrick Nunn was really, you know, I know we think of him as an undrafted free agent, but he was really more of a G League find. Gabe Vincent, I think, was in the same boat, right? He was kind of just bouncing around. Was he at the Sky Force, I think, before the Heat? I gave him a shot. Like, they've done a good job of kind of finding these guys. We haven't necessarily seen it, I don't think, with the European guys coming from overseas, but they've done a good job kind of building out the fringes of the roster, the bottom of the roster with those kind of guys. So there'll probably be someone from the Summer League who, you know, gets a real shot to make the Heat next year, right? Like, it seems like it happens every year, basically, at this point.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who they go after in And when they look at undrafted guys, it's because usually it's pretty interesting to see like the guys they've been coveting and who what type of player they're going after. I mean, like you just mentioned a few of them, but like Chris Silva, he had a reputation in college. Obviously, he was like defensive player of the year in the SEC and very good shot blocker for South Carolina and just defensive player. But you know, they go after him and they develop into it. He had a standard contract, like he was a guy on the 15-man roster. So it's just interesting to see how they go about kind of finding these diamonds in the rough and you know, their vision for those players.
Yeah. Any undrafted guys who you like? Anyone who you've read about or second round kind of guys that I know you're not probably doing the same type of draft prep you're usually doing, but is there anyone I don't know, you've maybe heard about that has piqued your interest?
No, I've done no draft prep, actually.
Yeah.
Between the Olympics and everything and the Heat not having a pick and me not thinking they're having a pick, they're going to pick, then I haven't really done any. I've been leaning on you, David, to give me your knowledge of some guys who might go undrafted that you think would fit with the Heat.
Yeah. So for my I'm going to go off Sam Vecenie's draft guide at The Athletic. He ranks the top 100, so that gave me a good starting point. I'm going to say, what pick should I start with is saying that guys could be undrafted, right? Because, you know, it's not going to just be the straight up top 60. What, like 45 and below? Does that sound fair? 46 and below?
Yeah, I would say, outside like 46, top, 50 maybe around there, like 50 and below around there is fair.
All right. Well, a couple of guys have come up on the list. You asked me to give a top five, but I don't know if I have a top five. I like Isaiah Livers from Michigan, kind of like a stretch four kind of guy. You know, I don't know if he's like totally a fit with what the Heat need. I don't know how much you're just looking for need in undrafted free agency anyway, but, you know, he's a Michigan guy, right? He played for Juwan, got hurt in their tournament run and kind of derailed them a little bit, but, you know, stretch four, 6'7", 6'8" kind of guy. Just a guy who I feel like is going to be an NBA player. I like Charles Bassey from Kentucky. If you're looking for, you know, I know we've talked a lot about finding that kind of traditional center. This guy was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school. You know, 6'10", like a true like 6'10" center, right? Like what you look for, kind of an old school kind of guy. You know, if this was 1997, he'd probably be a lottery pick. That's the way I kind of feel about him. I think he fits that. If you're looking for just that big center, that big old school kind of center, and we feel like that's maybe something the Heat need, then he's a guy that makes a lot of sense to me. I love Raekwon Gray from Florida State. I don't know what he's going to do in the NBA. He's kind of like Zion, but not athletic. You know, like a 6'8" point power forward from Dillard. So, you know, local guy.
It doesn't sound like Zion at all.
No, not at all. But, yeah, the Florida State tried to plays him like Zion, but he doesn't have the athleticism. And again, he's a Dillard guy, Fort Lauderdale. So, got some local ties there. He's a guy that just kind of makes a lot of sense as someone. It feels like he'll be on the Heat Summer League team. I don't know what that'll mean. Like, I don't know if that means he'll make the team. But it's a fit that kind of makes sense. And he's, you know, he's got some, like, you know, point forward. And obviously the Heat have really leaned into that. Even not even just with Jimmy, but they were doing that with Justice Winslow a couple years ago, too. I guess I got to throw Luka Garza out there. I don't really know, you know, he's a DC guy, so I got to shout him out. And obviously was like the national player of the year in college basketball. And another guy who, if we were in 1997, would be a first round pick, just really skilled offensive center, horrific defensively, but, you know, can be like maybe a little Enes Kanter-ish, I think is probably the comparison you would throw out for him. And who else do I like from this list?
I think you're at 5, by the way.
I think I'm at either 4 or 5.
You're killing me.
I'll throw the unfortunately named David Duke, point guard from Providence. Just, you know, like kind of a classic, like scoring college point guard. You know, you can never have too many of those types of guys, but just unfortunately named.
Are you a Cade guy at the top of the draft? Like, is that the guy?
I'd go Cade. I think I like Mobley a lot, but I feel like Kate, like, you gotta just take the wing who can create things. I know that sounds foolish after we just saw Zion, or after we just saw Giannis win the NBA championship, but unless, you know, I don't know if Mobley will ever be that kind of guy offensively. I think he's gonna be awesome defensively. But I think Cade is, you know, that's what you build championship teams around, is bigs scoring wings who can do a little bit of everything. And I know he's probably going to be a point guard or shooting guard, like, as a rookie, but he's really kind of like a big small forward who can do it. Like, it's obviously, like, people are going to compare him to, like, Magic Johnson and LeBron and, like, stuff like that. And that's what he's giving you. And there's a reason that that guy goes to the top of the draft.
Yeah. I've even seen, like, Luka comparisons, which,
yeah, a little Luka-ish. I mean, they're all in the same mold, right? Big ball handlers, basically, who can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think you always take that guy number one.
Exactly.
I think that's a lesson that's been learned over the years. Like, if you can find a wing who can do pretty much everything and create for others and also score, like, there's not enough of those in the NBA. So I agree. I think Cade ends up number one. That's my prediction.
All right, we got a nice little Broward County representation at the top of the draft, too, with Scotty Barnes, who's Florida State, went to U school with Vernon Carey Jr. So, got some second straight year, we'll have at least one South Florida guy taken, which obviously doesn't necessarily happen every year.
No, it doesn't happen often. But basketball has been, I mean, you can speak to this more than I can, covering a lot of high school basketball, especially States and Lakeland. But, like, high school basketball in South Florida has been picking up lately. And I kind of attribute it to the Big Three effect. Like, I really think that, that team, that era of basketball.
Yeah, the Big Three plus the way, you know, just kind of Wade in general.
Yeah.
Like, the Heat turning into, because, you know, even these kids who are getting drafted now are, you know, let's say they're 19 years old, means they were born in 2002, right? Yeah, right. So, you know, they were like probably some of their first memories are that the Wade championship, basically, yeah. Right?
So. Yeah, that's the way it works. That's why, that's a big reason why football has been so big down here lately, over the years, with the Dolphins being so good, in the 80s and 90s, and the Hurricanes being a powerhouse in the late 80s and 90s and even early 2000s. So it's just funny how that always translates to, the lower levels,
yeah.
And the youth levels in the city.
Yeah. All right, should we move on to free agency?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this obviously been the biggest topic we've had on the show over the last couple of weeks. Now we are closer, you and Barry Jackson combined on some stuff this week, just kind of setting the stage for what will happen on Monday when negotiations can begin. Is that right? Negotiations can begin Monday, and then basically can – the window opens the following Friday, August 6th. August 6th to start signing. What's the latest? I know by the time people are listening to this, it could be outdated, but what is the latest? What do you feel like confident about that just going into Monday will be the options, basically? Knowing that a lot could change.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that he can go here. And a lot of it, honestly, is based on kind of what they know entering free agency, because the timing of this is so tricky. Because, the Heat have team options to decide on with Goran and Andre by Sunday. At 5 p.m., they have that deadline. And, the easy answer would be you decline those options. You're not going to pay Andre $15 million next year and guarantee that salary. And you're not going to guarantee Goran $19 million. So the easy answer would be you decline those options and you either operate with cap space and clear that space, or you hold on to their bird rights, operate as an over-the-cap team, and you sign up to a cheaper contract. Which that is definitely possible. But, if they would need those contracts for a trade, because right now the Heat have five contracts to trade, right? Jimmy and Bam are the two highest paid. They're not going to trade them. And then after that, the drop off is Tyler Herro at $4 million. So realistically, to get a trade done, you can't do it with salaries because you don't have the number, the salaries to do it. So they'd have to kind of probably include Andre or Goran's number in there to get a deal done. So, Do you take those options and use those contracts as trade pieces? So there's a lot of different ways that he can go. I think they ultimately do not exercise those options, and from there they decide whether they want to operate with space and renounce those cap holds, and then they would lose the bird rights to those players, and Goran and Andre might just sign elsewhere, or they decide to keep them but sign them to the cheaper deals. The thing I do feel confident about, and this is kind of just a formality at this point, they will extend qualifying offers to Kendrick and Duncan by the Sunday deadline and make them restricted free agents, because obviously you want to have those rights to match any outside offer, but if they need the extra cap space, they can always pull those qualifying offers once free agency begins. So might as well just extend them. If you find out that you need the space, you can always pull them. So those are kind of like the looming decisions that he has to make. And then from there, it kind of gets tricky based on kind of what guys are available, what does Lowry's number look like, and all that. So there's definitely a lot of decisions that he'd have to make.
I think we talked about this last week. How is the Olympics affecting this? Because we obviously, Damian Lillard is going to be the biggest trade name potentially. And Bradley Beal, I guess, who's not with the Olympic team anymore. But is the Olympics a factor here where a guy like Damian Lillard, it's really hard to imagine him signing with a new team from Tokyo or getting traded to a new team from Tokyo, right?
Yeah, it is. And who knows what's going to happen in that situation. I know Dame said he's still not sure what he wants to do with his future. It doesn't seem like a trade involving Dame is going to happen anytime soon. He's beginning a 4-year deal.
Yeah.
Like you said, he's playing in Tokyo. I'm guessing he'll work it out with, I would think, work out with Portland to see kind of how this year goes under Chauncey. And, maybe at some point it does seem like, if things don't work out at some point soon, he might ask out. But it just seems like that's not a deal that's going to happen, in the near future, just because of his contract status and, what he's doing right now with the Olympics. Just a lot of things going on. I'm sure there's a certain effect it has from the standpoint of, I'm sure my guess, Magic, my guess would be that the Heat are asking Bam, like, okay, what's the latest with Dame? Like, is he really available? Is he really going to ask for a trade? What's the latest with Bradley Beal? Like, you're around him. I know you have a relationship with him. Like, was he trying to feel out, like, what it's like to play for the Heat? Like, that goes on, right? I mean, it's only human nature to ask those questions if you're the Heat. So, I mean, I think that's maybe the effect it has. But honestly, like, just, I don't think, and tell me if you disagree, David, but I don't think the Heat have the assets to get any of those deals done. They just don't. Like, how could you compete?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, like, how could you compete with, like, an offer from Golden State when they have, like, two really high picks in this year's draft and James Wiseman, right?
The Heat don't
have a picked offer for years, and, I mean, their top young asset is Tyler Hero.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's starting to kind of feel like the Warriors are the prohibitive favorite to get Beal, right? Just with that, you know, obviously there's nothing imminent, nothing like that or whatever, but with those two picks, like if there's going to be a Beal move before free agency, it feels like it's going to be that package. Because they have that package, you know, three legit rebuilding type assets that they're the one team that I think can really like swing this pretty easily. And then with the Heat, so I guess the next question there is, like, if you're the Heat, and this is it's the dilemma we've kind of, the catch-22 we've kind of talked through so much here is, you know, if you're the Heat and your end goal is still, you know, obviously your end goal is to win a championship, and the best way to get to that end goal is to get one more superstar, right? Whether it's Beal, whether it's Damian Lillard, whether it's someone who has not demanded a trade yet. Does that affect your approach going into the summer, right? That's the biggest question they have to deal with, right? And we talked about it last week. It backfired with Giannis. They clearly were gearing up to try to make a splash this offseason, and it did not happen. And now, you know, not they're in a bad spot, but they're in a different spot. And they could run into the same thing this offseason where are they really focused on just gearing up to make a run at whoever it might be via trade? Or do they worry about just kind of building a roster that around Bam and Jimmy can really compete for a title? And the good thing for the Heat is maybe those are the two same paths, right? I guess the one thing there is Kyle Lowry, right? That is, if you get Kyle Lowry, this kind of, I don't want to say it's your group, but like the Wizards don't want Kyle Lowry. You know, the Blazers don't want Kyle Lowry. But for the most part, it does feel like kind of, because it looks like it's going to have to be a trade if they want to get one more superstar, it does feel like it kind of lends the Heat well to just make this team for next season as good as it can be, and if a trade happens, it happens.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part. Like, at some point, you got to settle on a core here, right? I mean, Jimmy's going to be 32 in September. You don't have time to play for 2023 or 2024 if you want to win a championship with Jimmy. You know, and this is a window here that's not, you know, it seems like it's a large window, especially if they sign Jimmy to that 4-year extension. They're going to have him, you know, under contract for the next 5 years. But, you know, what is Jimmy going to look like when he's 34, 35, in the third year of that extension, or second year of that extension? So, you know, Kyle Lowry is an interesting case because, you know, he's 35, I believe. I've heard, and just like others have reported, that he wants somewhere in the range of 3 years and $90 million, which I guess the Heat could offer him if they just totally renounce Kendrick's number and they find a way to lower Duncan's cap hold by kind of like a wink-wink agreement where they agree to a deal, but they lower, you know, they pull the qualifying offer to kind of lower the cap hold of his as well. They could probably get to somewhere in that like $90 million range where they could offer Kyle. But do you do that? I mean, if you sign Kyle Lowry to a 3-year $90 million deal, and you sign Jimmy to the 5-year, a 4-year, $181 million extension that he's eligible for in August, you're going to have three players in 3 years making over $30 million. And Jimmy's going to be over $40 million. And, you know, Kyle at that point is going to be like 37, 38, and Jimmy will be like 34, 35. That's not ideal, you know. So the Heat are in a tough situation where they have to kind of, you want to make this team as you know, as competitive as possible, and Kyle makes his team better, but what are the future implications of that? You know, and what do you give him that third year that he really wants? And there's other teams that have, you know, I've heard, you know, there's been reports out there that New Orleans is very aggressive with Kyle and is ready to offer him that third year if that's what he wants. And they kind of have cleared space with that trade they made with Memphis yesterday, where they are in a position to do that. If they don't keep guys like Lonzo and others, they do have the space to offer Kyle that deal. So it's not going to be as easy maybe as we once thought for the Heat to land Kyle Lowry. It might not be at the price they want, but they're going to have a decision to make of like, okay, this makes the team better, but are we willing to deal with the long-term consequences of a contract like this?
All right, let's wrap things up with our weekly whale hunting segment. I think it transitioned us nicely because this is another point guard who is out there, and that is Spencer Dinwiddie is our whale this week. I really don't know if he's a whale, but you wrote it down. So Spencer Dinwiddie, who declined a $12.3 million player option and will be an unrestricted free agent, had an ACL injury, missed most of the season, but a guy who was very good before that injury. I think kind of an underrated injury when we kind of think about this season, right? You think of all the Nets injuries, like losing Spencer Dinwiddie too. That was like, that's another big one. So Spencer Dinwiddie, does he interest you at all?
He's a nice point guard. I mean, I think he'd make this team better too if he's healthy. I mean, I know he's had some ACL issues in the past, and obviously he just had a torn ACL. Last year, like you just mentioned, but if he's fully recovered, like he does address some of the issues that the Heat, you know, kind of have to address this offseason, you know, as a point guard who could kind of stabilize the offense and take some of the ball handling roles. The only problem with him is he's not a great shooter. Surprising. I thought he was like a better shooter, but you know, he's not very good over his career from 3-point range. That means you're going to have three non-shooters really in the starting lineup and carrying your offense at that point. I mean, those are going to be the three, you know, top offensive options. So that's the only issue. But I have heard that if the Heat don't get Kyle Lowry, like Spencer is definitely a guy they'd be interested in as kind of a, you know, fallback, I guess, option. And he's probably more gettable for the Heat. I mean, there'll be competition, you know, whether it's from the LA teams. I know, you know, there have been reports out there that Spencer's interested in playing in Los Angeles. But he will have cap space if they go the room up, you know, the room route, to offer Spencer, like, you know, they'll have between $21 and $27 million in space to offer him, or even over the cap, I guess they can get a sign and trade done if Brooklyn wants to kind of cooperate. But it does seem like Spencer's a guy like, you know, he will be, it will be on the Heat's radar. Is he a great fit? I'm not sure, but definitely something to monitor.
I kind of feel like he actually is a decent fit. I don't know, you know, he opted out of a $12 million contract.
Yeah.
Obviously, the goal there is to make more money than that and make it on a longer term. And, you know, as we've talked about with the Heat, like, it's kind of all becomes, is it worth it? Is this the guy you want to roll with? And Dinwiddie, in some ways, I feel like, you know, obviously if he gets massively overpaid, that becomes a tough contract to move. But in some ways, I feel like he is more movable than Kyle Lowry, because Kyle Lowry will ultimately just, like, fit with very specific teams, whereas Spencer Dinwiddie is young enough that I think a lot of teams could kind of talk themselves into him as a foundational piece. So it's all going to be about, is the money right there for him, and are the years right? And in the end, you know, maybe he's going to want, like you mentioned, the LA teams who, you know, the Heat can offer guys a chance to compete, to contend, but those teams can obviously, you know, really offer guys like, if you come here, there's a really good chance we're going to win a championship. And for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who is going to have, I think, a lot of different types of offers, especially coming off that injury, you know, that's the selling point that a lot of teams have over the Heat right now. Thing from Spencer Dinwiddie's Wikipedia page, as I'm looking through it, in April 19th, 2020, he confirmed reports that he wanted to represent the Nigerian national team. So he'd fit in perfectly with the Heat.
Yeah, and Victor Oladipo, too, also has Nigerian roots. Like,
yes.
Yeah, like, it's kind of crazy. Just all I know there was a story written on that by ESPN Undefeated late this season, just like the Nigerian roots on the Heat's roster. And maybe that does attract Spencer Dinwiddie to Miami, aside from all the money that he can offer him. Just the possibility of playing with other guys that played for Team Nigeria this year.
All right, I think we can wrap it up there. We'll have Tim Reynolds coming on in just a little bit. You got anything else on free agency, Anthony?
No, I mean, I just think it's going to be, like I said, there's a lot of different ways this could go. And I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what the Heat decide, because it's going to be kind of a glimpse at their long-term plan, I think. You know, if they really settle on Kyle Lowry and make a long-term investment in him, we kind of know, okay, this is kind of their core now for the next 3 years, and really Jimmy Butler's probably championship window and the rest of Jimmy Butler's prime. But if they kick the rock the next season and they kind of just do short-term deals and maybe just run most of this team back, then we kind of know, okay, they want something bigger, and they hope for something bigger maybe next year or maybe during the season with a trade. Because I think it is important to note, while they don't have much draft capital, not only can they just, like, go to OKC and say, do you want to lift the protections? Can we agree on something where you lift the protection in 2023 and unlock the rest of the picks? But also, if he just wait till 2023, which I know seems like a long time away, but it's only two drafts away, if that pick conveys, it's lottery protected, which you hope the Heat aren't in the lottery in 23, then all of a sudden the rest of those protections are lifted, and the Heat can offer a bunch of picks in any trade. So the longer this Beal thing goes, the longer this Lillard thing goes, like, I think it's better for the Heat, because right now they're not in a position to get them, but if this, like, drags on for another year, the Heat might be in a better spot.
Yeah, definitely. And I have a feeling in 2023, if it's not Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard, it'll be Zion Williamson or John Morant or someone else who's ready to find a new home.
Any star becomes available, Heat are always going to be mentioned, and Heat are always going to be interested. We know that.
Yeah, and by 2023, like you said, they'll have many more options to get that done. But anyway, let's take a break now, and we will be joined by Tim Reynolds live from Tokyo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back, and we are joined now by Tim Reynolds from the Associated Press, live from Tokyo. Tim, how's your sleep schedule?
I'm sorry, I just woke up. What'd you say? The sleep schedule's fine. I'm sleeping at night. I'm waking up in the morning. You don't feel refreshed ever here. Like, you know, I've done a few of these. This one just seems harder. I don't know why. And, like, I'm not crying about it. It just, I don't know if it's the flight or just because coming off the finals or because none of us have had a day off in 2 years. Like, I don't know what it is, but I just don't feel like I have a whole lot of a fastball right now. But it's an Olympics, and it's still the coolest thing. Like, it's this one that is just different. It's exhausting, but it's without fans. We don't have their energy, which really sucks. But there's really nothing to complain about other than, you know, you just have to have a little more caffeine, which, as Anthony knows, I am perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of load management in our business.
None. No, there is none. None of it.
Is this the most drastic time change you've dealt with, him? Or, I guess, Beijing.
I don't know. Beijing, I've been there a few times. I went to Pyeongchang. I'm used to the whole, if it's day here, it's night there, you know, kind of deal. I just really think it was a bad idea to write two stories off Game 6 of the NBA Finals and, you know, file at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning and have a 6:30 flight out of MIA to go to the Olympics. And
well,
then
no, you got
be able to sleep on your flight. I think I planned
it. You got the time change, kind of, right? Like, that's, you're working at 1 in the morning in Tokyo, if it's U.S. time. So, all right, we want to get into the Olympics with you. It is Wednesday morning in America. I guess it is Wednesday night in Japan. You guys are like 13 hours ahead of us, I think, right? So what is it? 11 p.m. there right now, is that right?
As we are taping this, it is 11:11.
Yeah, it is 10:11 here on the East Coast. So last night, this morning, I don't know what we want to say. The United States beat Iran handily, not surprising. I guess, you know, needed that win, obviously needed to do it probably in that fashion. But we've got to talk about the France game because that is the telling result so far. You know, obviously the United States drops a couple games in the lead up to the Olympics. I wasn't quite sure where to put the panic-o-meter. Obviously a lot of key guys missing. Drew Holiday, what was his line? Like, this is my first day with the France game. Like, he literally showed up that day and was probably the best player on the court for the United States. Obviously, Devin Booker and Chris Middleton in kind of the same boat. Tim, first of all, how shocked were you by the France game? And where did it change your expectations for this team?
You know, I wasn't shocked. Surprised, maybe, but I wasn't shocked because, you know, we had seen France beat the United States at the World Cup in China 2 years ago. And yes, this roster is a little better than the team that the U.S. sent to China for that tournament. But between losing to Serbia the next day in China, between losing to the two exhibitions in Vegas, you know, American exceptionalism might still exist, but the aura of American invincibility does not. These teams are showing up believing that they're going to beat the United States. And, you know, there was really nothing coming out of the scrimmages that made you say, okay, it's really working now. And like you said, I mean, Drew Holiday, literally, it was that day. They got to the hotel at 1:17 a.m. Yes, we checked. 1:17 a.m. local time Sunday morning from their Odysseys from Milwaukee and Phoenix through Seattle to get to the Olympics. And then they played a game at 9:00 Sunday night. So literally it was the day they got here. They got off the plane and played. The Iran game was better. Forget the outcome. Like, the outcome's irrelevant. The ball moved better. Guys got to see, you know, the ball go through the net. Devin Booker looked like he didn't have jet lag anymore. Chris Middleton looked like he didn't have jet lag anymore. Credit to Drew Holiday for how well he handled it. But you could see a big improvement in flow, in just in energy, in just the way guys were clicking. Pop kind of surprised us by he did practice both Monday and Tuesday. The original plan was that they were going to have Monday off to give guys some time. He got him on the floor. He figured they needed that. Again, the result doesn't really show how far they came on Wednesday because the result didn't matter. It was an overmatched opponent. But it just seemed like that some momentum was starting to build. So now we see what happened Saturday with the Czechs. But it was, to go back to your original question, David, the France result, no, it didn't shock me. It really didn't. I mean, I thought they would win the game. I'm not going to sit here and say I picked the U.S. to lose. I didn't. But there was no fear. And the longer it became a game, the longer that they let France hang around, you knew they were asking for trouble. And sure enough, they got the lull in the fourth quarter, and that was it.
Tim, is it fair to say at this point, like, any team with NBA talent is going to give the U.S. a competitive game? I mean, we've seen, like, it's kind of a representative sample set at this point between, you know, recent Olympics, the Worlds, you know, exhibition games, and, you know, take that for what it's worth, and then the France game. Like, any team with NBA talent is going to make it pretty competitive with the U.S., not because they're as talented as the U.S., but just because of the chemistry they have together, the time they play together, their familiarity with the international game. Like, when this team gets to the knockout round, like, should they expect kind of like these games that go down to the final minutes at this point?
Well, it's up to them, you know, because they do have more talent than everybody. I mean, yes, the Australians have been together. I mean, Joe Ingles and Patty Mills have been playing in national team programs together since they were teenagers. And I think they're now both in their 50s. I think just the way it seems, like, they've been around forever. So they've been around a long time. The French team has been around for a long time. The jokes write themselves about how long the Spanish team has been around. There is a certain level of chemistry and continuity that the U.S. simply does not have and will not be able to replicate in the next 1, 3, 5, 7, or 9 days. It's just not going to happen. That said, this team has enough talent to beat everybody in this tournament by 30. They just do. The question is whether they will figure out in time how to harness it. Again, like I said, forget the score. I think some of the things you saw against Iran were steps in the right direction. You need to see more of those steps against the Czechs on Saturday. And then the way this thing kind of looks like it's going to break, the Americans will be in that. It's really complicated how it works after group play. Like, there's going to be 8 teams that move on out of the 12, the 3 group winners, and then the best second place team that will probably be based on point differential, and mostly point differential anyway. The U.S. winning a game by 54 points is certainly going to help their point differential. So a big win against the Czechs probably puts the U.S. in that top pool, which means they would theoretically get an easier path in the knockout round. There's a lot of balls in the air, but I think there's – if they show up and play the way that they're supposed to play, no, nobody should hang with this team. It's just a question of can they figure out what that secret sauce is in time.
Yeah, I mean, from that France game, one of the most striking things for me was, one, that Bam was the leading scorer on the team for a lot of that game, and – you know, Kevin Durant only having 10 points. Like, I know they want to move the ball. I know that, you know, building the chemistry is almost more important than anything they could have done in that first game. Obviously, you want to get through with 3 wins and get the most favorable draw you can. But, I don't know, this team, as you kind of mentioned, I guess it's kind of finding themselves. But, they have the talent. Like, it feels like when push comes to shove, they still should be able to, you know, between Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard, like, the offense shouldn't be a question. They shouldn't be scoring, 70-some points in that first game. Like, it was – it felt like there were reasons to be concerned, obviously, off that first game, I think, beyond just, like, the loss. But I think there were also, like – it wasn't hard to imagine the United States kind of figuring things out pretty quickly. Just where – coming off that game, how did you feel about, you know, were you still kind of, you know, you're obviously going to Tokyo, you're assuming you're going to write a gold medal story for the United States. Do you still feel the same way after that France game? And I don't know, how do you kind of feel just about their chances right now?
I think they're fine. Like, I mean, they have the Czech game to continue working through whatever. You know, I mean, they still have it's a game they should win and should win handily. Give this group 2 big blowout wins, I think everybody starts to take notice. And I think they start to get their swagger back. I think maybe whatever hit they took from losing the 2 games in Vegas, from losing the game against France here, from, again, that aura of invincibility kind of being eroded around the world a little bit, you know, as long as they think they're invincible, then maybe that's the way to go. So I think if they have another big win Saturday, they become huge favorites again. I still think they're the favorites. I still think they're going to win the thing. I just don't think I think the lesson – you hope the lesson that they've learned at this point is that – you don't want this to go down to a down-to-the-wire game because you've got 6 or 7 alphas on this team. Pop could put a lineup of 5 alphas on the floor. It doesn't really work. Like, you know, who's going to be the guy? You know, they don't know. And you can see them freeze the Nigeria game, who was going to be the guy down the stretch? They didn't know. They lost. The first Australia game, who was going to be the guy? They had no clue. That game wasn't really in doubt at all the way it was going. The France game, if not for Jrue Holiday, it would have been completely hideous because they didn't know who the guy was. And I don't think they're going to have a Kobe, a Dwayne, a LeBron, that guy who can take Melo. Melo was so good for so many Olympic teams.
Should still be on the team.
Should have got, he'd earned, I agree with you, and I know you're we're both being like 8% facetious, but not really. Like
not really. No. I'm not even joking about it anymore.
I'm not either. He earned it. He earned it, and it's wrong. You're absolutely right. It's wrong that he's not here. He should, if he's the 12th guy, he's the 12th guy. He earned the right to be here. Period. Full stop. He did. That all said, they're not going to be able to figure out how to take five alphas and figure out who's going to be the fifth option. You need to go at guys from the jump. You need to get out and run. You need to put teams in a hole. You need to make them adjust to you. You need to flex muscle from the tip off. Seriously. You need to start putting on points in warmups. Don't let these teams hang with you. Games are shorter. FIBA games are weird. The rules are a little different. We've gone over all this ad nauseum the last couple of weeks. Don't leave it to chance. Start flexing your muscle from the get-go.
I'm going to need Dame and KD to stop passing up on open shots. Like, they should each be getting probably 15 shots a game, every game. Like, those are the two guys that they just need to take every open shot they get, right?
And KD said it today. He said, we're being way too unselfish. And he's right.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of an all-star game, except the other team's really playing hard.
Right.
So it doesn't make it an all-star game.
I wanted to ask you about the one Heat player on Team USA. I don't know how much you've had a chance to talk to Bam with everything going on, but just, like, what have you noticed just from observing him about how he's kind of handled this experience and how he's kind of transitioned to this role? It doesn't seem like it's a much different role than he plays with the Heat, just, like, with more talent around him. But how have you guys seen him kind of handle all of this since he arrived in Tokyo?
You know, Bam, so today Bam was walking past Kevin Durant when Kevin Durant was doing a small group interview coming off the court. And Bam was looking for the cameras, and he was looking. It was like that same look he has, like when Jimmy's doing the walk-off interview on Bali. It was Bam. So Bam, yes, very much in the same role as with the Heat. He's the guy looking to disrupt post-game interviews, and doing a fine job of it, I might add. I've talked to a couple of people who had access to practice. He's not the same guy that they had 2 years ago when he didn't make the World Cup team. He has impressed everybody really from the time the plane that carried him and Tyler to Vegas landed on July 5th. He's had three really good weeks, and he's shown why he's on this team. He's shown why they want him. He's shown why he's a max player. He's shown why he's an all-star. He's shown why he's probably going to be an all-NBA guy sooner than later, and he should be a defensive player of the year. He makes the game so much easier for the rest of these guys. We see it 82 games or 72 games this past year. You know, when he's playing for the Heat, you know, we get to write about that 72 times. I don't think USA Basketball fully expected him to be this good. I mean that. Like, I think they thought he was good for the international game, obviously an up-and-coming guy, a guy who would accept his role. I don't know if they expected him to be, like, a pretty critical part of this thing if they're going to get done what they want to get done. So I think he's had three exceptional weeks, and there's zero downside. Like, the Heat are getting a better Bam out of this. That's a win-win for everybody.
All right, Sam, I'll finish you with this one. What's the best thing you've eaten in Tokyo?
The best thing I've eaten in Tokyo is, without question, there is a convenience store chain here, and Anthony Bourdain did a feature on it 8 years ago. And he said the absolute best thing that he had is the egg salad sandwich from this convenience store. I forget the name of the thing. But anyway, you people.
Really?
It's a very simple egg salad sandwich. White bread, crust cut off, boiled, you know, hard-boiled egg. With this mayonnaise they use over here, where they don't use the whole egg, they just use the yolk, so it's a little richer, and it goes a lot further. I know it sounds weird. It's the best thing I've had. A convenience store egg salad sandwich. And I'm not crapping on the other food that we've had. Like, we've ordered in GARP because we can't go anywhere because of the rules. We can't, so we have to, you know, Uber Eats is bringing us, like, pizza and burgers and stuff every day to the arena for lunch because there's really nothing at the arena besides, like, microwavable hot dogs. Not kidding on that. Microwave hot dogs at the arena is pretty much the only thing. So you get your Uber Eats fix, which is, you know, after a while, it's going to get very not good. Not good for any of us. But the eggs, I'm telling you, the egg salad is phenomenal. Of course, I've gone for sushi a couple of times, and as you'd expect, the sushi here is pretty good. Breakfast is exactly the same every day. I'll say this. I'm going to give the best food to the egg salad sandwich from this convenience store chain. I still can't think of the name of it. I'll give the strangest, though, to the salad they give us at breakfast every morning. Salad comes with breakfast. Soup, salad, eggs, pastry, bacon, green beans, figure that one out, and yogurt. They give us the same breakfast every day. It's unusual, but the egg salad sandwich is divine. I'll say that.
Tim, knowing my appetite, and I have the taste buds of like a 7-year-old, how much weight would I lose until?
There's McDonald's.
Okay.
You'd be fine.
So maybe I'd gain weight.
I bet the McDonald's is awesome, right? Isn't it so, like, fast food in other countries is supposed to be awesome.
So I have not had the burger, because why? The teriyaki chicken sandwich at McDonald's in Saitama. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, why don't we have this? Like,
seriously.
It just shows you just how silly Americans are sometimes. Like, we just go nuts for the McRib, which is just foul on every conceivable level.
Yeah.
The teriyaki chicken sandwich here is actually a very delightful sandwich.
All right, Tim. Thanks for coming on from Tokyo. Get some sleep. Hopefully we'll get you on again next week if we can make the schedule work once we get to some really meaningful games from Japan.
And remember, I think by this time next week, we'll probably have other things to talk about.
That's true, too. Yeah, we'll get you on maybe for some free agency talk, some draft talk. Anthony and I talked about this in the first half of the episode, but it's going to be interesting with some of the big rumor names in Tokyo, how that's going to affect things. Like, you know, it's hard to imagine Dame Lillard winding up with a new team while he's in Saitama, Japan, but maybe I'm wrong.
I will make this prediction before I let you guys go. One of the guys on this team, by the time we talk again, will have been traded.
Wow. All right, like it. All right, yeah, you can follow Tim from Japan at By Tim Reynolds on Twitter. You can follow Anthony on Twitter at Anthony_Chang. He's got your draft coverage, your free agency coverage at MiamiHerald.com coming. You can follow me on Twitter at DBWilson2. Until next week, we'll have fun in Tokyo, Tim.
Thanks, guys.